Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Talking Markets podcast series here on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today's conversation, I am pleased to be joined by Anwiti Bahuguna of Northern Trust Asset Management. Anwiti serves as Chief Investment Officer of Global Asset Allocation for NTAM, is responsible for managing investment performance, process, and philosophy for multi-asset strategies globally. Anwiti leads NTAM's strategic asset allocation, tactical asset allocation, and capital market assumptions, as well as oversees the portfolio construction group and multi-manager business. So with that, Anwiti, it's great to have you here on the podcast today. Thank you for dropping by and for spending some time today with our listeners. Very much looking forward to hearing your thinking.
Thank you for having me, Dan. It's my pleasure to be here with you.
Absolutely. So maybe beginning, Anwiti, with the U.S. economy, there has been a lot of discussion, debate over the trajectory, whether we're in store for a soft landing, a no landing scenario, or perhaps something else. So from your vantage point, how do you see the U.S. economy evolving from here?
Great question, Dan. So we are still in the soft landing camp here at NTAM. We do expect growth to slow down from the sort of breakneck pace of 3% or so over the last three quarters. But if anything, macro picture in the U.S. continues to improve in the past few months. And I'll give you a few examples of that. One that everyone follows very closely is the U.S. labor market. In September, there were notable revisions on the upside to labor data, so much so that the numbers are looking strong enough, Dan, that people are really questioning, is it soft landing or no landing? Because data is so good. We still think that breakneck pace of growth will slow down to something around the 2% range of growth that the U.S. is typically predicted to grow at, but not the sort of 3% number we have seen in the past few quarters. And then I'll point to one sort of rather obscure data point that maybe the markets don't follow that closely, Dan, and that's the GDP versus GDI divergence. And so GDP, everyone knows about. GDI measures not the spending component of growth, but the income component of growth. And for the past several quarters, they were painting a different picture where GDP was strong, but GDI was weaker. And in the third quarter, we saw revisions to these numbers also, so that now the GDI number has been revised up to match the strength we saw in the GDP numbers. I'm going in the weeds here a little bit, but what I wanted to really say to your listeners, Dan, is that if anything, U.S. economy remains strong, labor markets remain pretty strong, and inflation will slowly continue to come down. And that is sort of our view on growth going forward.
So against that macro backdrop, just taking into account the road ahead for monetary policy, thinking back to September, of course, the Fed did commence with its rate cutting 50 basis points. As we look ahead through year end, two more Fed meetings to get through, and of course, a lot of anticipation over what 2025 might deliver. What are your expectations, Anwiti, for monetary policy or further rate cuts from here?
So I think markets are sort of very focused on whether it's going to be two cuts this year or one cut. And to me, that is less of a relevant question. We may get two cuts. We may get just one if near-term data is stronger, because the Fed is, in fact, quite data-dependent. The more interesting question, which I think you implied in your question, was sort of where does the Fed end up? In other words, what's the terminal rate of this rate cut cycle? Do they cut all the way down to 2.5%, 3%, which has been the norm for neutral interest rates in the U.S. economy, or do they stop somewhere higher than that, which is where data has been pointing to with its strength? And where we come out to is we think that the neutral rate is probably down somewhere closer to 3, 3.5. And so we do see another 150 to 200 basis points of rate cuts over the next 5 to 6 quarters as economy starts to slow down to that 2% number and as inflation continues to moderate.
And then outside of monetary policy, the economy, of course, top of mind for many at the moment, the upcoming U.S. election, which is roughly a week and a half away. How might certain outcome scenarios of the U.S. election, Ann Witte, influence your macro and market outlook?
Dan, we've been thinking a lot about U.S. elections. Initially, the poll numbers were fairly close, and I think they're still fairly close. But in the most recent months, we've seen a momentum shift towards, I would say, a Republican sweep. And we have seen a few trades emerge, and I would very much put that in quotation mark to say a few trades emerge, Dan, where we have seen certain stocks outperform. We've seen interest rates rise, anticipating a slightly more expansionary fiscal policy, which is probably growth positive, but also inflation positive. And with that anticipation of rates remaining a little higher, along with dollar strengthening, these have been the sort of macro trades that have emerged in the last 2 or 3 months. But I would again emphasize that these are trades. Election is still very much a statistical dead heat, and we know from experience that polls can misfire. So if we sort of step back and say we don't have a clear picture yet, we may have shortly after the election, but even then a lot of things will remain uncertain. In other words, we won't know if the election promises or the rhetoric that we heard from both campaigns, if those actually will be the policies that they propose. And even if they do propose that to the legislative body in the U.S., it's not clear whether the full extent of those policies will be implemented. So 3 months out, it'll be really hard to gauge what exactly will get implemented. And markets may be volatile in this period and may react to their notion of what they think might come down the pike. But it's not clear yet to us that we can take a very strong position in our portfolios based on elections alone. I'd like to point out that if you look at last 3 months' performance, though, the best performing stock market has been Chinese equities. And one would think that a Republican sweep, if that's a possibility, would actually not be China positive. But this is going to the point that elections are not the only driver of outcomes going forward. Individual countries' fiscal policy, what the Fed does, how do companies respond to these policies? All these factors will come into play and things that we need to stay on top of as we look ahead for market performance.
Now, specific to real estate markets, and this is going back to the rate cutting cycle a bit, though now that that's underway, what are your thoughts there on the implications for real estate, commercial real estate, office in particular, of course, has been very stressed since the pandemic?
Sure, Dan. In our multi-asset portfolios, we are right now overweight real estate tactically. You know, I think the key driver of performance of real estate in order of sort of significance in my mind is what happens to interest rates. And our view is that interest rates will continue to come down. And secondly, economy will remain moderately strong at around 2%. On the other hand, markets have been very bearish in this space for a very long time, particularly because of the reason you mentioned when it comes to post-pandemic view of commercial real estate and also sort of residential real estate. But we see opportunities in this space. We think given valuations are supportive and rates are coming down, this is a good time to be overweight real estate in our portfolios. We're actually also looking at the performance of office REITs, and they have been one of the best performing asset classes so far as market is warming up to the idea of rate cuts and valuation support in this space.
looking outside of the U.S., are there any opportunities at the moment that jump out to you? And just mindful as well of the abundance of geopolitical risks out there, how are you navigating those when assessing investment opportunities outside of the U.S.?
Sure. I think when we look at sort of really election risk, geopolitical risk, the tendency is to sort of think maybe it's okay to not diversify too much outside of the U.S. But I would say that broad diversification is still key when you have a longer term time frame. We are looking at geopolitical events and they have a short term impact on market performance. But after sort of 12 months out, they don't seem to have that strong an impact on market performance, and fundamentals of the countries you invest in and the companies you invest in seems to matter much more. So our quantitative research has shown that, right now it's okay to invest in emerging markets, and in our portfolios, we are overweight EM. Of course, they've had a valuation support for a very long time, Dan. That's not the driver this time around for us staying overweight EM. We are quite heartened by the policy changes we are seeing coming down the pike in China particularly, and other countries which are realizing that they need to do more to support growth. And so we are overweight emerging market in the portfolios, being very mindful of short-term volatility possible due to elections, due to geopolitics. But again, going back to the fundamentals, pointing to the companies, specific companies that can factor in all these risks and then still continue to grow earnings.
And Witty, thank you for joining us. We have covered a fair amount of ground today. Before we close out, any final thoughts or takeaways or anything you would like to reinforce for our listeners?
Yes, Dan, thank you for the opportunity there. I would say that it's very natural for us to try to make a connection mentally between who leads the White House and how the stock markets would do. But I would say history has shown us that it's really individual companies and their ability to grow and their ability to handle policy changes that matters. It's a little less relevant who gets elected the president and leads the White House, but really how do companies navigate the various challenges that come down? And how do they grow and how do they handle technological advances that matter? So it's really important as investors to stay focused on that aspect of the market.
And Witty, it was a pleasure speaking with you today. Thank you for spending some time with our listeners here on the Talking Markets podcast on UBS On Air Market Moves. And do look forward to having you back at some point.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.